Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study. I'm very pleased to have with me today in the studio for Research Matters, Professor Lily Cheng and Dr. Helen Greck. Just a few words about them. Professor Cheng is a professor in the School of Speech, Language and Hearing Sciences at San Diego State University in the US. She's an ethnographer and an author and has conducted research in bilingualism, multiculturalism, and has authored many articles and books in this area. Professor Cheng is the current chair of the Education Committee for Logopedics of the International Association of Logopedics and Phoniatrics. She's a fellow of the American Speech, Language and Hearing Association. Dr. Helen Greck is a senior lecturer and coordinator of the Communication Therapy Division at the Institute of Healthcare here at the university. She lectures mainly in areas related to speech-language pathology and audiology. Dr. Greck is also practicing educational audiologist and speech-language pathologist. She has been invited as visiting lecturer by various higher institutions. She has also been an expert evaluator for the Leonardo da Vinci proposals and the FP7 and FP6 programs of the European Community for Research, Technological Development and Demonstration Activities, and also worked for the European Union Programs Unit here in Malta as an evaluator of proposals submitted under the Grundtvig and Erasmus programs. Recently, Dr. Greck was awarded an intra-European fellowship under the FP7 program of the EC. She has several publications in international and local scientific journals and has contributed many chapters in books. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Well, perhaps before we bring Professor Cheng into the discourse, perhaps Dr. Greck, you could explain a little bit what brought you, what gave you the idea of inviting Professor Cheng to Malta.
Right. I must say that it is a great honor for the university and for Malta to have Professor Lily Cheng with us. And so thank you, Professor Cheng, for accepting our humble invitation. And this is your second visit, actually. And Professor Cheng has provided an intensive course to our students, which highlighted multiculturalism and multilingualism, particularly in relation to communication disorders in children. This is her area of expertise, as you very well pointed out earlier on. And we felt, because we are an expanding division within the university, and because our main concern, particularly on our island, is language disorders related to multilingual populations. We are increasingly becoming multilingual. An expert like Professor Cheng would definitely help us with bringing in, transferring knowledge and expertise to our students, particularly because we want them to have a more international perspective. And she obviously has informed them very clearly about her research in this area. The other issue is that Professor Cheng is also the chairperson of the Education Committee for Training Speech-Language Pathologists, and we have just, I'm fortunate enough to be in that committee as well, and we have just revised the education guidelines for education and training, the basic training, which we follow as a division. And we're about to actually, change our program of studies as well, in line with these revised guidelines. So Professor Cheng has been very enlightening to our students, to our staff, and also in terms of research, particularly, again, because were only recently involved together in a small survey, a pilot study really, on our migrants, those seeking refugee status, in relation to their communication, how they are communicating within their own community, outside that community with the Maltese population, and also in relation to whether they are aware of speech therapy services in Malta, whether they think their children particularly or themselves as adults require this service, and we wanted to know whether actually these services are reaching them. This is a pilot project which we hope through the International Association will extend to other populations, other migrant populations, not only within Europe but outside it, particularly in underserved countries.
In fact, this is something that has cropped up in various other interviews that I've done with academics here on this program, where Malta is useful as a pilot study area because we have this sort of microcosm and small group, but sort of fully formed at the same time.
Exactly.
And this has proved useful for research in many areas, and in this case it seems as well.
Yes, and I think it's also attracting the European research area as well, and we have been awarded, as you very well know, not only us, but also other faculties, projects specifically because they feel that Malta is a unique situation, captive population, and particularly in multilingualism, bilingualism, and, you know, this is where the basic research in any particular discipline should start off. So I think in many respects we are very lucky that we are attracting and receiving funding to carry out these pilot projects, which eventually could be extended to larger and similar populations.
Professor Cheng, you're obviously in your studies you've been thinking about and developing ideas about multiculturalism. The current trends in the mobility of people, how are you seeing that at the moment? What exactly is happening out there?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think mobility can probably be defined in many different modes or ways. People are traveling more, so that's mobility. Countries are getting to know each other better. That's another mobility. The trends in Europe with nations joining to the European Union, that's mobility. People move about because of job opportunities, and multinational companies are recruiting people and they are sent to everywhere in the world. We have outsourcing, which is mobility, and insourcing, which is also mobility. So the world is indeed more flat. But there are also very critical matters that we have to think about. That is, in terms of the world of poverty and the world of the world is not equal, as we all know. And because of that, people are driven out of their countries into other countries because of internal unrest, civil wars, or actually wars in their own territories and countries. So there are many who leave their countries and they are mobile because they have no way to stay in their countries. And so we have illegal immigrants, migrant workers, seasonal workers, people who are often they leave the country because they are no longer having their families anymore. So we have to look at mobility from a upper class professional ways, and also mobility because people cannot live in their own countries and they're not educated, not trained, and they are desperate. So we have to deal with all those issues.
So really you've got a sort of multi-layered situation, and I suppose the problems or challenges would be different at those different levels.
Mm-hmm. Those who are doing outsourcing or insourcing, they are basically multilingual. They may not be multicultural. That is to say, they learn many languages as tools. They learn the computer languages in order to communicate through the computer. They learn the English language or the French or whichever language, because they use those as tools. My challenge as a professional is to look at individuals who can cope multiculturally. If you come to Europe, there is the larger macro European culture, but there are also micro European cultures which are multicultural anyway, for example, Malta. That's why Malta is such an ideal place to look at people with multilingualism and multiculturalism and to see how things develop over time. Yes.
One of the interesting things, I suppose, about the Maltese situation with regard to people coming in from the outside is that they will have possibly their mother tongue and maybe another regional language. And when they come here, it's not like going to Italy. It's not like going to France, where there's French, Italian, German. Here they've actually got two languages. They've got English and Maltese to sort of cope with. Was this picked up in the survey at all? As a phenomenon?
Yes. I mean, we actually looked, as I said, at the, what we, in layman's term, call or refer to as illegal immigrants, those seeking, I have to emphasize, refugee status. And we did ask them about the language competence, particularly the young ones, about their competence in Maltese and English, and to what extent in oral, spoken Maltese and English, and written. And it is very, very interesting what we found out. I mean, basically, there was a gender difference, whether it's female or male. Don't forget, these come from mainly North African countries, so they have different status in terms of whether you're a female or a male, very often. And it also was associated with their level of education and also whether they were younger or older. And it was very interesting whether it was English or Maltese as well. As you very well know, the North African languages are quite similar Semitically based to our vernacular, our Maltese language. So obviously they picked that up quite easily. And it's interesting. But it doesn't get them much over the internet, over, you know, for jobs and whatever. So it was very interesting. We had a small, we started off with a relatively large population, but because this was voluntary, they're often very skeptical, you know, so we some of them refused to give us some information or even to be interviewed. But it was very, very interesting, and I'm sure there's a lot of, there are a lot of implications, particularly in Malta, because as you very well said, you know, when they were to choose, they've got exposure to English and Maltese, but they do Maltese for what reason? They have to learn English for what reason? Is it spoken or written? Is it because you're young? What do you need? Mm-hmm. And it was really very fascinating on what their priorities were and how they said, okay, I'm proficient. I have some proficiency. For example, what we found, there was a trend, some proficiency in Maltese, spoken Maltese, but we can write English. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense, you know, for the young ones particularly, whereas the older ones may have found it more difficult to pick up the written language. So, you know, they told us more that they can speak Maltese and understand Maltese, for example.
Very I have some Eritrean friends, and I remember saying at the beginning, in my ignorance, oh, well, I suppose you're picking up Maltese. And he looked at me and he said, well, actually, I'm a Christian and I don't even have classical Arabic, which a Muslim would have from studying the Quran. Yeah. So he didn't have that. He said, so actually, English is my second language and I much prefer to speak in English.
And that's exactly what I meant, for example, with regards to the gender difference. For example, in some, mostly the Somalis, said that the girls, the females, only received education in terms of being taught the Quran. Nothing more formal. So obviously they could pick up Maltese, but they were illiterate. They had no written anything, you know. And that's fascinating. Obviously that comes in with multiculturalism and why they choose to pick up one language to learn one language or they make more effort for the written versus the spoken language. It's all kind of, I think, merged together.
These are some of the challenges that Dr. Greg is talking about in this context. What other challenges have you found as a professional when you've been faced with working with a multicultural population?
Yeah, in the United States, for example, we had refugees from Southeast Asia. And one particular group is called the Hmong population, H-M-O-N-G. They went to the United States with no literacy background. Their language is not a written language. They are pre-literate. So, yes, literacy would be an issue. Of course, the other issue is dealing from an Eastern to a Western culture. In your case, you're talking about African versus more the Mediterranean. So I think that you face many, many issues based on the native background of the individual, the indigenous background sometimes, also the possibility of a very different religious background and certainly socioeconomic status background. So when you look at the treatment or intervention of a child with a disorder, you have to cross many bridges. And the explanation is not just a linguistic explanation. There could be the religious, the native, the folk explanation. So we have to cross many bridges, and they are not that easy.
Yes, and I mean, perhaps to add to this, this is why it was so enlightening to our students, because obviously we are receiving migrant children and to a lesser extent at this stage, but they are, once they achieve a refugee status, they have every right, you know, to access our services. But then it is not the speech-language pathologist who will decide which language the child will be exposed to primarily or receive intervention in, because of the cultural, religious, you know, not just a linguistic issue, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not just because we speak Maltese, so we decide, you know, or rather because we will manage more with written English in tertiary education and whatever. You have to consider all this, all these concepts, all these contexts, and not easy, because sometimes you need an interpreter to discuss with the carers who may not be proficient. We had one particular situation where we had an Indian mother who was in Malta, who brought her child for speech and language therapy. And we used the younger sibling, her daughter, who was proficient in English to some extent, but not the mother, to interpret what mommy was saying, to actually get her information, mm-hmm. case history information. And it was fascinating. Mm-hmm. Whereas the younger sibling was obviously picking up more languages because she was here earlier than her older sibling, mm-hmm. and her mother couldn't communicate in any way except her vernacular. So, you know, it was very, very interesting. And you have to find ways and means on how to understand the situation before you even start intervening, because you are addressing their needs and not yours, or mm-hmm. not the Maltese population's needs. It's very, very important.
I would imagine also, to pick up on something you were saying before, the attitude towards the pathologies mm-hmm. involved mm-hmm. With speech difficulties mm-hmm. would be different according to the culture that the people have come from as well.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know, attitudes towards stuttering, for example.
Oh, definitely. Or, yeah, hearing impairment. I mean, in some situations, in some communities, hearing impairment is not an impairment, mm. you know, full stop. So the child is there, and whatever language he picks up from the natural context, from the home language, that's acceptable. Mm. And, you know, they don't have the perception
mm-hmm.
that they need to receive help, therapy, mm-hmm. support, whatever. And definitely, that is a big issue. Sometimes even towards literacy as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why? Especially, I found that with the females, with some of the females. No, in our country, we don't need to to learn written language. So why are you pushing us for this? Why are mm-hmm. you want my child, mm-hmm. you know, who was born in Malta, but I don't see the need, and it's not easy.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing is there are many communication disorders that are invisible. If you look at a child, you cannot tell. He may be autistic. Unless he has very extreme behavioral symptoms, he may just look quiet, or he may be just focused on something. Also, deafness is invisible. Learning disability is invisible. So in many cultures, in the folk ways, these children are blessed. And disorders and diseases are also viewed differently. As I mentioned earlier with the Hmong culture, epilepsy is a gift from God. So why do you treat epilepsy? You know, so we have many, many challenges when folk ways are so different in looking at language, the disabilities, literacy, and also the power of communication. Some cultures don't view communication as being so powerful. They are very nonverbal in ways rather than the verbal languages. So many things to deal with. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you have to take everything into account when you're facing that that kind of situation. Also, the sort of looking at it from the philosophical point of view, going back to our immigrants for a moment, the fact that language isn't simply a tool, mm-hmm. that language, as soon as, I mean, you don't have to be a philosopher of language to understand that language, when you start learning a new language, you're going to start getting closer to the culture of the country that uses that language. And perhaps there might also be problems involved for people, because in a way, some of them might be terribly keen, but some of them might also not be so keen to actually, because they see that by doing that, they will be integrating more. I don't know whether you found that in attitude.
Yes, we did ask them what were their main concerns. And a lot of them said communication, even amongst the migrant community themselves. Because they told us, that, when I was interviewing, actually, they told me, you think that it's okay because we're all migrants. You know, they were quite angry. We can understand each other. Even if we speak the same language, we can't understand each other. And they had a lot of breakdowns of communication. Even the coordinators there were telling us, and primarily because we seem to put them all in one basket, and you know, and it's not easy to understand different cultures, different languages, and to communicate. So they really picked up that. So although I kind of went with the perception thinking that they may have problems with communicating with the local Maltese people rather than, you know, internally, I think they had more problems. That's what they told us, that they had more problems internally, and that the Maltese could communicate better with the Maltese population. Mm. And I thought that was quite fascinating,
yes,
actually.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Have you found something similar to that in your studies in America or not?
Yes. Obviously, there are many more languages spoken in the schools in the United States. You know, in Los Angeles, we have about 130 languages and different kinds of practices, many conflicts among groups, between groups, not just linguistically, but culturally. For example, within Southeast Asia, you have the people from Laos, from the mountains of Laos, the Hmong people, the Vietnamese, those who actually was pro America, those who were pro Viet Cong, so the issues were just fantastically challenging. And also, because of their varied experiences in the past before their arrival, in this case, we call these people the boat people. They came by boat from Southeast Asia to other parts of Asia, and then they were flown to the States. These boat people, they have very, very different experiences as well. Okay, so altogether, even though Malta does not have a very large, huge migrant population, I would imagine many of the things we experienced, you are experiencing, and probably even more.
Well, I know that you are also connected a little bit with the Confucius Center. So in the minutes that remain to us, perhaps you could talk a little bit about it. We are going to have our own Confucius Center here, mm-hmm. and I believe you've met the director.
Yeah. It's very interesting because there are many Confucius Centers, institutes all around the world. It is an initiative from the Chinese government to promote the Chinese language and culture, being that there are more than one quarter of the human population speaking Chinese. It is the most spoken language in the world, but they're spoken mostly by indigenous Chinese people. They're not spoken by the rest of the world. And as China is gaining more and more visibility around the world, the Chinese language and culture are being misunderstood, so they want to promote that. So on your campus, you have the Confucius Institute, and you have a sister university in China, which is Xiamen University. Xiamen is a coastal city by the coast near the South China Sea. My university, San Diego State University, also has a Confucius Institute. I am the American director of the institute. Our counterpart is also Xiamen University. So we are sisters in terms of sister institutions. And your director from Malta will be flying over to Xiamen, so will I, in a few days. So we met already on this campus, and we will be meeting again in Xiamen. And I hope that this your campus will be able to offer language lessons, Chinese language lessons and courses, but also aspects of culture, so that somehow that can be related to the academic purpose and also for the business purpose. There might be people who are interested in business, doing business in China, or Chinese people doing business in Malta. I think the universities can serve as a bridge again for the purpose of the transmission of culture and knowledge.
Well, thank you both very, very much, Dr. Helen Gregg and Professor Lily Cheng, for coming to talk to us today on Research Matters. Thank you. My guest today was Dr. Christian Sherry. I do hope you can join us again next week for another edition of Research Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.